This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 638, brought to you by Harry's. To get your trial shave set, go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 638. My name is Connor Gilpatrick. I'm still alive, and my co-host is Josh Flanagan.
I am mostly alive.
Well, that's a good way to put it for both of us, I think.
Uh-huh.
Mostly alive also implies partially dead.
He's mostly dead.
We are a fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book on the show. Other books we read, the patron pick, some superpowers, and if you don't, you know, maybe some listener mail if we've got time. We've been running long a lot lately.
Blah, 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 blah.
That's the way it goes. But the most important thing is, Josh, is the show is fun. It's for you, for me, for everyone.
I mean, if it wasn't for the show,
what would you got?
Just this, and I need this show.
Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Exercise some caution. And before we get to the pick, Josh, this was one of those weeks where I thought I had like a reasonable number of books, but by the time I actually got to reading, it creeped up to 20 books again. I could not believe it.
Heroes Con got us,
I guess.
Yeah, it was the same thing. This was one of those weeks where like I might have tried a couple of things, but by the time I got it, I was like, no, I'm not trying. I'm not trying that. It's not.
I have a rule. I can't try new things if I've got 20 books, which is exactly what I have.
Yeah.
Which is not true, actually, because there was a bunch of Image number ones, which I guess is technically called trying, but...
You know, what's funny is that I have this issue of New Superman, and I've been like, I don't know if I want to keep reading this, and I didn't read it, and then I just looked at it, and it says final issue. I was like, good choice, Josh, good choice. You just read, you read 23 of the damn things.
Well, I think good choices would be the name of your autobiography. Let's talk about your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 1.
I was mildly surprised.
Yeah.
Mildly surprised. But then again, I'm so numb from the cold medicine for 2 weeks that I don't know if that anything would be actual surprise.
This whole Marvel 2-in-1 thing has been, I want to say, a bit of a slow burn. You know, at first it was like, well, look at this. Jim Chung is doing this. Chip Zdarsky's writing that. That's weird. And that culminates with sort of a growing feeling of appreciation. And then a couple of weeks ago, issue number 6, I believe, was Pick of the Week when we had Jim Viscardi on.
Well, you had to be convinced to read it, didn't you? I mean, you don't like Chip Zdarsky's work normally.
I didn't have to be convinced. I tried it on my own. I think that I had gotten mixed up between this one and the Matt Rosenberg Winter Soldier Hawkeye story.
Right.
I think I thought it was the same series. Because they were like, it was like Marvel title, like innocuous Marvel title. So either like Tales of Astonish or Marvel 2-in-1 or whatever. And then the two characters are featured underneath it. So I think I thought that like they had switched arcs and the characters were different. So I read it by accident, sort of. But I also saw Jim Chung and I was like, all right, let me try this. And then, you know, at the end of that first one, I was like, this is really good.
That's pretty good.
And I kept going. And then when I had the pick of the week, I thought, well, that's going to be the end of this Fantastic Four story. And that's fine that we got that. And then this was, I saw Annual came out. I was like, oh, that's weird. The other one just came out. And I saw Declan Shalvey on art. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen a lot of art from him. Certainly not from Marvel in a while. And I read it. I think I might have read it first this week. And I just got to the end of it. I saw that Shalvey's actually going to be doing issue number 7. So he's on the next arc, presumably. Mm-hmm. Of this story. And so instead of this being 2-in-1, The Thing and Human Torch, it's The Thing and Doctor Doom. So this is really kind of a continuation of, whatever was it, Infamous Iron Man? Whichever Bendis Iron Man story.
Infamous Iron Man.
Yeah. You know, whichever one was Doctor Doom. This is a different characterization of Doom. I don't care. Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters.
Right.
Like, his voice is different, but the motivations of the character are the same. You know, as I was going through this, basically they're in a different dimension, and so there's another Doom there. So you've got Doom talking to Doom, which was really interesting to me. And you've got Ben Grimm, who really hates Doom, but they have to work together and be, you know, this grudging respect, which is a stretch of a term. I liked a lot of the psychological stuff that was going on here. And there's definitely been I didn't read Fantastic Four for a long time, so it feels like a kind of comic that I haven't had for a long time. And even when it was around, it didn't feel like Fantastic Four. Apparently we missed a couple of arcs, by the way, but so did everyone else.
No, well, we were talking about it. I read those arcs. I read all those books. I guess this is going to go all the way up until the relaunch of Fantastic Four in August.
Great. But it doesn't feel like filler. It feels like a valid road towards something.
Right. So we got 2 more months, basically. So I guess, I mean, I'm not going to assume. I don't know.
You are about to assume, but you're admitting that you don't know.
If you've got issue 7, which would be this month, mm-hmm. and then 8 would be next month, July, and that would be it. I would assume just 2 more issues, but who knows?
Right. This one kind of counts as an issue, but I mean, you could get something done here. Actually, the next one is Thing and Human Torch instead of Thing and Doctor Doom. Doesn't matter.
I think Thing and Doctor Doom is just for this annual.
There's really good, like, they refer back to the Council of Reeds. Basically, there's a lot of connecting stuff in here that was not answered after Battle World. And it doesn't feel like forced or harsh. It's like they're just telling this story, and it works for me. There's like a revamped Council of Reeds, and you go to this room, there's a bunch of Reeds, and we see them talk to each other and deal with Doom, and there's, I don't know, that Doom-Reed relationship is really interesting. And the actual 616 Reed is in here, but it's not really him. It's a copy of him that he made. And the idea is that when they go to the Council of Reeds, the one that's on their world still is there. So they return to that, but they carry all the memories that they got in the other place. So it's sort of like simultaneously existing and still getting all of that experience. It's just interesting stuff. And also, I really like Declan Shalvey's art. I always have. He's really, there's a little fight scene in here between the Dooms. And like, he's really good at the sort of bare knuckles fight scenes kind of thing. The first time I noticed that was when he was doing Northlanders for a little while. I've seen that a lot in Injection. There's some really great fight scenes, some storytelling sequences in there. And so I appreciate that. Jordy Belair coloring him. So that always looks good. It was just a fun issue. And like, right now, out of all of these number ones and all of these other sort of attempts at high concepts, this was the thing I had the most fun reading this week. I'm digging this kind of comic book right now, which says a lot about where I am. The pick is always subjective.
Well, I mean, that's good.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you enjoying this?
Yeah. And this was fine. I think I have cooled a lot on Declan Shalvey.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if his style has changed since Thunderbolts, but I think he's a great storyteller. I just, his style doesn't really do it much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I like the story. I've always liked this book, so this was another good chapter of it. Doom is interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think my favorite part was the two Dooms. Basically, the Doom that he interacts with here is the super scarred face Doom, mm-hmm. which is, you know, as a kid, he was always messed up. I mean, we never saw his face ever as a
right.
kid. The peaks you got, he was always, like, burnt or scarred. And here he's Handsome Doom, and so that Doom hates him even more because he's Handsome Doom. And
but
there's a lot of psychological issues.
Because he is still running on intellect, though, he's reasonable about things. And so he doesn't automatically just attack the other Doom. Like, he recognizes there might be something to hearing him out or to interacting with him, which he respects himself, really. It's mm-hmm. that circular thing, which I enjoy.
And also, I mean, there's no more worse situation for a Doom than a Council of Reeds. So that it's fun when Doom's...
Mm-hmm.
He's not just one Reed he's got to deal with. It's all these Reeds.
And I like the entire time that he's in the Council of Reeds, like, his face is sort of screwed up in distaste.
Yeah.
Like he's mad and he's actually losing control of his. It actually plays a little more realistic than the serene Doom that Bendis was writing. Like it, mm-hmm. it it sort of carries a little more. Like, he's doing it and he believes in it, but he's having a hard time being really happy about it. And you could go either way with it, but we're actually getting a taste of both. You know, where like the other Doom would kind of accept. He's like, no, I'm doing the good thing now, and I feel much better about it. Whereas this Doom is doing it, and he knows it's the right thing, but this old thing still rankle him because he's Doom.
I wonder what they're going to do when they start over in August. I mean, there's a lot of baggage, Fantastic Four-wise, and I think we've been seeing it here. You know, all these things that Reed did, and I feel like they just need to sort of clean slate it.
Yeah.
Not reboot, but like...
Yeah.
Just stop referencing all the other stories. This is fine because they're wrapping it up, but I think going forward they need to...
I'm sorry, remind me again who's doing it.
It's Dan Slott and Sarah Pacelli.
Okay.
I'm really excited for it because Dan Slott's Silver Surfer run was one of the best Marvel books of the last couple of years.
All right.
I think he has that Kirby thing down really well. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think they just need to move forward once that book starts. Let's wrap it up here. And then let's move forward. But I mean, it's fun. It's a fun book, for sure. And I'm glad you like it so much.
Yeah, I like it. I enjoyed it. There we are.
That's fine.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with it.
Also, like, there really, I wasn't reaching for it. You know what I mean? Like, I looked at everything. I was like, that's the favorite thing. I read this book. There wasn't a, this was a tough choice. This was whatever. I just was like, that's what I wanted from comics this week. And sometimes that's a little easier because when there's so many comics and you've got... It depends on the week, but you've got some weeks where comics are trying to introduce themselves to you frequently, and you're just like, it's kind of a lot of work to like, am I supposed to like this?
There's a lot of number ones this week.
Yeah, and that...
A lot of introductory stuff.
That can get tiring, I think. So this one was just like, okay, I know all the stakes and we can just start running. You know, like, that's something that's nice about ongoing comics. And depending on your week, that's what you want.
So this week we had Thor number one. As we have many ones, number ones we're going to talk about this week from Jason Aaron and Mike Del Mundo and Christian Ward.
Mike of the world.
I find this art choice fascinating.
I was thinking that.
I like him a lot, but it seems very challenging for such a high-profile book.
I had exactly the same thought. I first came upon, during Battle World, Jason Aaron did a miniseries in there of... it was Archon, or I forget what the name of the character was, but he did it with Mike Del Mundo, which I just happened to find, and I read it, and I was like, this dude is amazing, which I want that to be clear when we're talking about this right now.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's doing all of the art and color, and it's got, doesn't look like anybody else's thing, and it's really kind of fantasy. It's basically, you know, there's a lot of Frazetta in this, I think, but then also sort of a cartooniness that I really like. Now, when I was reading this, I was like, wow, going from Esad Rebic to Russell Dauterman, neither of whom are terribly, both very good, but not terribly challenging, whereas this is definitely outside of that mold. It'll be interesting to see how it plays.
Dauterman and Rebic are both sort of epic Marvel artists. Their style fits the very grand scale of a Thor book, whereas this feels very, I don't want to say grounded, but... It has a much more indie bend than...
I'd say the camera is way close up for a lot of this, is what I'm noticing as I'm looking
for. The scale is tighter, for sure.
Yeah, like, we're really, like, living with the people and in their faces, and we haven't... There's not a lot of that big from-a-distance shot. Actually, looking through the whole thing, it's very up close, which is kind of... Weird World was the name of that. Archon, I think, was the character in it. Sorry. And then if you switch in here to the space stuff, it's by Christian Ward, who we... was on that Black Bolt book that we talked about. I don't know how much that's going to continue, but that fits. The two styles actually meld together pretty well. Sure. What did you think? Like, story-wise, are you, I mean, you're back to Thor.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, Thor's back. He's got a bunch of hammers that don't work as well as Mjolnir, and he's back being Thor. He fights Juggernaut here, which I thought was fun.
That was fun. I like Juggernaut a lot. I liked that whole, that interchange. What's interesting, too, is that I texted you. I was like, make sure you read Thor, and you're just like, I do. And the last page reveal actually, like, I was like, wow, that's a good last page reveal.
On the main story?
Yeah, I guess this is the second story, but it's the end. It's the last page of the book. So we go into space at the end, and like, basically the universe is dying, or it's already dead, but they're just like on the edge of it. And so Thor tries to go into the abyss to figure out what's going on. And, you know, the last thing is, hey, bub. And it's like wizened old Wolverine with the Phoenix around him, sort of the last surviving being human in space. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, the second story is old King Thor, however they're calling him, with his three granddaughters as the universe is dying. It's the end. They remade Earth with their new race of humans, but it doesn't matter because the universe is dying and Thor goes to as far out as he can go to figure out what's happening and runs into the Phoenix Force as held by Logan. I mean, I thought this was a solid issue. I liked Christian Ward's art a lot in the second part. I might have liked it a little bit more than Del Mundo's in the first part. It's a very fun style for Thor. Jason Aaron's been writing Thor for however long he's been writing Thor. And he's got it all down, you know. Loki's good in the first part.
Yep.
Thor's living on a boat.
I like that Thor is on his way back to being Thor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we're not pushing him further away from being Thor, which I think was the thing.
You know what I will say? He looks weird with the helmet and the short hair.
Yeah, but that's just sort of the...
I mean, not when the helmet's off, I get that, but like when he's got it on and there's no flowing hair around it, it just looks weird.
I didn't really notice, but I think that's because I've seen so many different looks for Thor in this book on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's three Thors that we've been following basically, so I kind of just go with it.
He fights a Submariner, he fights Juggernaut, he fights a shark, he lives in a boat in Newark.
There's a very conservationist theme space shark story going on here.
Yes.
Which I think is nice, as opposed to just beating up sharks. Christian Ward draws a good shark.
If Thor lives in Newark, then they're really missing the opportunity to have a Thor, Miss Marvel team up.
I do have to say, I love Thor living on an old boat. I really like that. Like, he has a crash pad because like he's kind of down and out.
Yeah.
It's like Chevy Chase could play in the movie now, like in the 80s. That's great. Yeah.
No, it's a fun book. It was good. I liked it.
I think that people are going to have to brace themselves a little bit for what is probably going to be an over-examination of Brian Michael Bendis' Superman work.
That's fine. I'm into it.
I think there's going to have to be multiple check-ins because we're seeing development every week. There was a very specific moment this week where I believe that you said that the Bendis needed to be turned up.
Yeah.
There were clear signs of that this week. There was definitely some Yiddish...
The Man of Steel number 3, yes, it definitely felt more Bendis-y.
Uh-huh.
At the same time, there were things about this I'm worried about. This might come as a surprise. I really loved his kind of wacky Batman.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me a lot of, you know, the old Justice League Giffen books where Batman was kind of the comic relief straight man. And here he's kind of that way again. I really liked that.
Like he's a square.
You know, have you tried using location map pins? Sometimes they make a shape. That's how I caught Penguin. Made a shape.
It is very funny.
It was. You're right. I mean, this is. I think it's interesting. He clearly, it's not as fully formed as say when he went to Marvel from his indie work and started doing, you know, Spider-Man and then the Avengers. This is more like, I think we're watching him finding his footing as he's writing it.
Which I think to be, it's kind of fun and fascinating. Like. You know, he gets the benefit of the doubt that a lot of newcomers don't, that he's going to figure it out and it's going to be interesting. So, you know, fair play to him.
What I find interesting, I guess I didn't really clock it as it's happening, but there has been these one or two page Jason Fabok inserts, I guess, that are either flashbacks or flash forwards. We don't know yet what they are of Clark and Lois and Jonathan. It's the only time we've really seen Lois and Jonathan in these books at all. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really curious to know what's going on there. I think he's doing a good job with that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I like the Supergirl in here. The thing that concerns me, and this is an issue as this guy, this character whose name we don't know, who showed up in that first issue special.
Steroid Taskmaster?
Yeah. He's come to Earth. Mm-hmm. And the thing that worries me is that they're sort of setting him up as the guy who destroyed Krypton, and I don't want that to be a thing.
Right.
This is much in the line we've been talking about of...
Yep.
There's always been a Green Arrow, or like there's always got to be some sort of grand conspiracy. I just want Krypton to have blown up because of the hubris of the people of Krypton, which is a much more powerful thing than some guy got mad at Krypton and blew it up.
Yeah, even if that was because of their hubris.
I just don't want that to be a thing. I hope it's not. I hope it's a red herring.
Let's not overlook the rare and special thing that is a full issue of Ryan Sook sequentials.
Yeah, for sure.
It actually happens so infrequently that I kind of forget, and I'll be looking through it and going, ah, man, that's great. Like his Superman face and head is perfect.
Yeah.
There's some really nice acting that goes on in this. Like it's just, I really like the line work that he does. And actually the layouts in this are really good. There's a lot of sort of historically iconic types of images that happen in this, and the layouts are interesting, and just a lot of really cool things to look at in this. But at the center of it is this sort of really rock solid Superman,
mm-hmm.
which I dig.
Yeah, I mean, it's Bendis is really good at getting these guys to do work.
Yeah,
and I don't know what Ryan Suk's been doing, but certainly not been in any comics I've seen.
Oh, I feel like I haven't seen him regularly since Multiple Man or whatever, that Madrox series forever ago. That was like over a decade ago.
Well over a decade.
He'll do a thing here and there. Yeah, I mean, like at the end of the day, like I don't think this is like the best comic series going, but right now it's one of the most interesting just because of the factors at play.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also interesting. I mean, it's interesting to see that this is not getting, I think, the sort of seismic reaction that DC thought it would.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it not? I don't even know.
Sales-wise, it's not. It's selling good, but not great.
Uh-huh.
I think people are just sort of bewildered because it still happened so quickly. I mean, Bendis only was like, I'm leaving, was like, I don't know, for like 2 months ago.
No, it was the end of the year, beginning of the year. And then right away he was like, I almost died. So it was a couple of things, one after another. Or I don't forget what the order was, but, you know, like Superman's got a lot of baggage. People have decided one thing or another about him, and yeah, I don't know. He's not, for some reason, like, it's hard to make him the big deal, which seems antithetical.
It's unfortunate.
It's comics.
I'm enjoying it, even if I'm not liking everything about it.
Yeah.
I am enjoying it. Did you read The Weatherman number one?
I did. I think for a little bit I thought that this would be the patron pick, and I started to read it, and then afterwards I was glad I read it, even though it wasn't the patron pick. And I think this is the writer who did Shirtless Bear Fighter, which I mm-hmm. didn't keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
But it's paired with Nathan Fox on art and Dave Stewart on colors, so that's a good team. Basically, sure. It's a future sci-fi story, Mars 2770. There's a sort of an artificial atmosphere and world that they have developed there, and it's a lot like our own world. It sort of reminds me of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some sort of futuristic things, but you've also been like, wow, you think they'd have come a lot further than this in 700 years. And they didn't. But I think that actually plays. And it's very like a slow reveal of what this world is and what's going on. There's this weatherman. It seems like it's going to be a wacky comedy thing. And he sort of wakes up 5 minutes before he's supposed to go on. And he comes in and he does great. And everybody loves him on the weather because he's fun and he's open. And then there's this whole other story that sort of reveals itself at the end where you're sort of getting a lot of twists and turns that you don't expect. I don't really want to give it away because folks probably didn't read it.
I don't, but at the same time, one of my main takeaways has to deal exactly with that.
Okay.
And I'll try not to, how can I say it? What's interesting I'm finding is that apparently the new Image genre is one guy fucked up the whole world.
Uh-huh. Okay, there's at least...
Analog is about that.
Yep.
And there's another one, which I'm blanking out right now.
Black Science.
I don't know if that's a conscious thing, but there's been a bunch of Image books about, mm-hmm. you know, one guy having totally fucked up the whole world. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if that is a manifestation of people's anxieties, but that's what this one is as well. I like this one. I thought the art, Nathan Fox art, was really great.
Yeah.
As I was reading it, I was like, I don't know what this is, and that's kind of fun. As you said, I was like, is this a comedy book about a wacky weatherman? That doesn't seem sustainable. And then, of course, it's revealed that it's more than that. But I liked it. I liked the world building in it. I thought the sci-fi elements were fun. I guess I didn't realize how far in the future it was. It does sort of seem it should be not as far. But I guess if you're terraforming Mars, it's got to be pretty far.
Yeah, and also it seems like it's not a wealthy area. So, you know, like maybe there are places where it's much further advanced. But like I could see that happening. Like a bunch of people get a lot of the advanced tech and then a lot of them don't. So like we went through this long period of amazing technical prowess, you know, and then maybe it slows down. Maybe we run ourselves in the ground and we get stuck in this,
right?
You know, for our own version of the Middle Ages or the Dark Ages, but on a different planet, which I think is interesting.
Right.
There were a lot of interesting ideas. I, you know, and at the end of the whole thing, I was like, wow, that was something. And I know what you're saying, but I still found it interesting nonetheless. Kind of sci-fi I really like.
I don't think it's a detriment. I just found it fascinating that this is another Image book about one guy who secretly destroyed everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the water somewhere. I wanted to mention Titans Special number one, which is coming out of the events of No Justice, which for a miniseries that I don't think a lot of people read is making a big impact on these books. So out of No Justice, in which the Teen Titans, or the Titans and Teen Titans and a bunch of villains teamed up with the Justice League to save the world, but not really doing it. So I guess one of the things that happened when the Source Wall broke, in addition to that mysterious thing that's coming towards Earth in the Justice League books, is that a wave of energy came out and went through the planet and activated a bunch of new superheroes. And so this is very similar to the Terrigen Mists, and also super similar to what they're doing in the Flash TV show, where the dark energy thing blew up and caused all the superheroes to be born. So it just seems very, it felt very like we're doing this kind of situation. So here we have the Justice League tasking Nightwing with forming a new team that's affiliated with the Justice League, that has their own office in the Justice League building, which I love more, Justice League bureaucracy, that goes out to deal with these new emerging heroes. They don't have a Cerebro yet, but I'm assuming they'll get one. And so basically, Nightwing just reforms the Titans to do that. So this was a building the team issue, which I liked. A lot of different artists on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know who's going to be drawing Titans moving forward. Seems odd that they're not going to be restarting the Titans, the new number one, like they did Justice League, because it's like, next issue, Titans 27.
Connor.
Yeah.
Listen.
I know.
Nothing makes sense.
We have a
Nothing
t-shirt.
Matters.
But it's a good team. It's a good sort of mix of old and new Titans, Ms. Marvel and the female Steel, along with Donna Troy and Changeling and Raven. This was fun. I like these characters together. It's still Dan Abnett who's been writing this series the whole time. He's got a good handle on these characters. I just like a more Justice League bureaucracy. Yeah, this was good. And the Titans book has been quietly very solid.
Dan Abnett has a quality ability.
Yeah.
So it's unsurprising.
I will say this. The thing I enjoyed most about reading this book was seeing how every artist interpreted Nightwing's mask. Some people don't drew it super tiny. Some people drew it super big. But I guess that's art for you. I am so dumb.
That's the next shirt. It won't sell, but.
I have so many drugs in my body right now.
Uh-huh.
The one thing I haven't done yet is showered, because we're doing this very early in the morning.
Well, it's anyway. I got 3 hours on you, and I have not showered either.
But I'm looking forward to showering as soon as the show's over, and mostly because after I'm done showering, I can shave with my Harry's razors. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that in 2 days, and I really need to. It's like sandpaper. That's what I love most about my Harry's razors, is that I come out feeling fresh and clean and ready to face the day, no matter how sick I feel. It's part of the showering experience for me. I shower and I shave, and after they come out of their bathroom, I feel much better about
life. You don't
do
it in the shower.
No, I did that for a while, and it was just a mess.
Somebody gave me that advice a long time ago, to do all of those things at once, because apparently the steam from the shower keeps your face,
oh,
you know.
Oh, sure.
But logistically, like, I feel like I've got most of the benefit if I do it immediately after. So I do that.
What I would have to do would be then to touch it up when I got out of the shower.
Right.
With the, because I didn't have a mirror in there. And so it's like, well, if I'm going to do it again, then I might
You
got to well
get
just
one of those fogless mirrors.
Yeah, well, I don't got anywhere to put that.
No.
Anyway, the point is I stopped doing that. It also feel like a mess. You know? You got your water's bouncing off your arms all over the place.
Sure.
Gone all over the bathroom. So I stopped doing that. Anyway, I like feeling fresh and clean and new after my shower and shave. And that's one of the great things about Harry's razors, is that we know the blades are great. And so the shave is great. And so I feel even better afterwards. Harry's stand behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer, and you can claim yours by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. Josh, what's the German word for blade factory? Do we know?
You were going to look it up last time. Yeah, we didn't.
That's why they bought the factory in Germany that makes some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. They've got their own factory. And by selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more at your local store. And quality guarantee, if you don't love your shave, you let Harry's know within 30 days and they'll give you a full refund. And that is pretty terrific. Now, here's your trial offer. You get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, your weighted ergonomic handle, your five-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, your rich lathering shave gel, and your travel blade cover, essential for those who are on the go. Here's what you do. You go to harrys.com/ifanboy to get your trial shave set, harrys.com/ifanboy. That's how you do it. You can't not do it. If you're shaving your face, you got to go to harrys.com/ifanboy.
Reiserklingenfabrik.
Reiserklingenfabrik.
My German pronunciation is, I'm positive, quite bad.
And that's the word for German blade factory?
Razor blade factory.
Okay.
I think you'd add Deutschland to the end of it.
Deutschland und Fabriken Klingen.
Reisen Klingen Fabrik.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the Wildstorm, Michael Cray, number 8. I've done this before. The reason that this is relevant is I think since the last time one of these came out, it's been announced that Brian Edward Hill is going to do... It's not... Detective. He's going to do Detective. I don't think he's the... I think he's doing an arc. It's Michael Moretti on it right now.
No. Moretti is the fill-in.
Okay.
Brian Hill said on Twitter they were doing a fill-in issue.
Okay.
Before his run started. It came out this week. It was just a one-shot mystery.
So... Regardless, first issue came out and I couldn't really know what it was, and I read it and I wasn't sure. And then each issue since then, I've been more and more impressed by the writing in this series. And basically, this is basically an Elseworld story. It's part of the Wildstorm thing, but it really is a world where this Wildstorm guy goes around trying to take out the superheroes who are all bad guys. So the last issue was he found Constantine, and Constantine was working for Wonder Woman, and so... There's some twists and turns, but really there's some, at the heart of this is really good character work that's going on that sort of plays with these other versions of the characters, but the core of the character actually seems to be pretty much the same. So it's fairly sophisticated and like subtle. And a lot of guys, you know, he's done comics. I think he worked for Top Cow for a while, but a lot of guys who are new into this, you know, the hammer you over the head with stuff or bore you to death. And this is neither of those things. It's a really nice... slow build to the story. We're 8 issues in. I'm completely in. I'm digging it.
I assume this was like a 6 or 7 or 12 issue.
I'm going to guess 12. I'm not sure. But like the main Wildstorm, the Warren Ellis one is only 24.
Which psycho hero is this week, Josh?
It's a continuation of the story, though. So we've got Constantine and Wonder Woman still, which is sort of the first time that like all these hero of the week person, you know, like they're all sort of coming together in one story. So like last issue was Constantine, but then at the end it was revealed that Wonder Woman was involved, and so this one would technically be Wonder Woman.
Mm.
It's good. I like it. I'm impressed. So I have good feelings about Detective.
So this week, Josh, the biggest comic in the history of the world came out.
Mm-hmm.
The Magic Order, number 1, from Mark Miller and Olivier Coipel. This is Miller's first comic from his Netflix deal. If you don't know, Netflix purchased Miller World, Mark Miller's creative output, and this is the first book under that deal published by Image Comics. So you can imagine this series is probably in development at Netflix. It was fine.
It looked really good.
Yep.
I had a little trouble telling the characters apart.
Yes.
There was a guy in a top hat who, when he didn't have the top hat on, looked pretty much like a combination of the other two blonde guys, which was a weird choice.
That would make sense because he's their dad, isn't he?
I guess, but you know, it's a graphic medium, and I don't know who any of them are, so find a way.
They all have very similar faces, I guess, because, again, they're a family. But, right. Like, when they're all wearing fedoras, it was hard to tell. Mm-hmm. Also, the guy who was supposed to be their father didn't really look much older than them, except for a couple of shots. I don't know if that's because he's magical or if that was just an art thing. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah.
I did not like it. I had a fun time reading it. I didn't love it. I like the style a lot. It's, mm-hmm. You know, it's your modern styles where everyone's in trench coats and fedoras. And
It's you know. Not far from the sort of tone and pacing of the Jupiter's Legacy stuff. Jupiter
yes.
Circle stuff. It's very close to that, but with magicians instead of superheroes.
He has cycled back ever so slightly to ultraviolence.
Uh-huh.
Not to the extent he was in.
No.
However long ago when he was doing Superior and those other books, or Kick-Ass, but like, and I know he's still doing Kick-Ass. He reads the room, and he plays to it. So when it was all about ultraviolence, he did that. And then when there was a backlash, he turned away with Starlight and other books that were Huck, mm-hmm. that were not like that. And now he's sort of in a happy medium, whereas Jupiter's Legacy was a very interesting and layered and nuanced book, especially the flashback second arc. It was also had a lot of ultraviolence. This mm-hmm. one... It's pretty violent opening, cold open.
Yes.
I mean, I think this is really intriguing. I think, you know, this is basically Bad Wizards. You know, it's mm-hmm. take superheroes and just give them magical powers instead of superpowers and wands and stuff. And this is basically the same story. You know, you've got good wizards protecting us from evil. It's basically Harry Potter. And then you've got the bad wizards who are causing trouble. And so there wasn't enough here to really know.
No,
where
not
we were
really.
Going.
I will tell you the. The Netflix thing is weird.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I get why they did it, but it's just like such a strange entry into the comic book space. And I was like, did anyone tell them about comic books?
Well, it's not an entry into the comic space.
I know, but...
it's an entry into development.
Yeah, I know. It's an IP grab, but like they're the, like the back of the book has a big Netflix logo in it, and like it, you know, it's present anyway.
They don't care less about what the book sells.
No, I know.
It's about ideas, but yeah.
It's just interesting. That's all I'm getting at.
There's one guy you're gonna pick to.
Oh no, it's the right call, and he could have definitely sold it in the meeting. I have no doubt. He will make that commitment in the room. If there was anybody vying for pick of the week contender again, it probably would have been Mr. Miracle number 9.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the war is over and they're in negotiations, or the war's nearly over and they're in negotiations. I loved every single second of reading this book and every single second of looking at it, which are almost two experiences. But you know. Because you sort of go through and read it, and then at the same, like, I notice, I'm like, look what this looks like. Because sometimes when the storytelling's working really well, you kind of aren't noticing it, which is what it's supposed to do, but then you want to notice it. Specifically, like, there was, like, work scot-free versus backroom scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
I read, it's one of my favorite things about this. I liked the slaves holding up the table. I liked that a lot. I was like, oh man, like, you have this one idea, and then you're like, right, you constantly remember that this guy was brought up, you know, on Apocalypse, which I like. At one point, Kalibak, you know, picks up and throws the guy, and he throws him so hard that he explodes against the wall. And Mr. Miracle has to play it off completely cool and smoothly. And then later, we cut to him, and he's like shivering and shaking because he feels bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a nice psychological sort of exploration, I guess, in this really extreme world. But it speaks to me.
This issue is probably the closest thing you're going to get to like pure bureaucracy in the DCU.
There was that too. I was like, is that Kalibak? Are they? Oh, this is like, once I dawned on me what was happening, I was like, this is great.
He pulled out his reading glasses so he could read the.
That was awesome. Notes. And it had the little motion line for the clicking it open. I was like, what's going on here? And I was like, oh my God, Kalibak has reading glasses.
Yeah. No, I mean, this has been great. The meta mystery of what this actually is to me is the most interesting, because there was another book this week that featured, Green Lanterns that featured the New Gods, and it's the terrible New 52 versions of the New Gods.
Uh-huh.
Then you have this book, which is the classic Kirby New Gods, and you're just like, what is happening here? There's another page where it fuzzes out like an old VHS tape, and suddenly Kalibak starts looking very much like a Kirby drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the thing I'm really interested in here is what is actually happening here, not so much the actual story.
I don't care about that. I could do without that entirely.
That's really why I love this book, is what is going on here?
What is? Darkseid is.
Because there's something going on. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep bringing this motif back of this is like an old VHS tape that we're looking at.
See, I think that scares me. Like, I feel like that at the end, if that's something stupid, it's gonna ruin the whole thing for me in some way.
Hmm.
No, I don't think that it will be stupid, but it's the same thing where, like, it has to have this twist. It can't just be this story. Like, it has to have that other higher concept, you know. But the whole thing was in the mind of Funky Flashman. Like, and I don't think Tom King is going to do that, but I've been trained enough to be wary of it, I think.
Did you read Stellar?
I did. Well, I didn't finish it.
From our new highfalutin friend, Joseph Keating?
Oh. I got, like, part of the way through it, and I was like, it's not for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was interesting. This kind of, like, Weatherman was another first issue where I don't think I have enough to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Weatherman? Did I say that? I don't even remember anymore. That's how long I mind up. It was very much a first issue where, and we've talked about this in the past many times, that sometimes these first issues just aren't enough to know what you're really in for. This was fine, but I'd like to know more.
Actually, at the end of it, she's saying, I'm saying I murdered tomorrow. And I was like, so it's another one of those? Of the person ruins the world?
That could be it, yeah. It's all over the place with Image.
Yeah.
One person is responsible for destroying everything. Everyone's feeling really guilty right now.
Yeah, and also thinking that one person can make a huge difference. It's like we're taking, like, it's I was going to say we, but, like, it's like everybody's taking responsibility for everything that's happening, even though it's being blamed on one person or something like that. And there's a lot of post-apocalyptic, like, get it the heck out of this world, but put the feelings that we have for this world into that one, or the fears that we have about a really broken and sad world that might come at some point. And that's all over the place, which is, by the way, exactly why Pick of the Week was Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 1.
Oh yeah. At one point she says here, they've been through enough. I destroyed all that they had once before. Mm-hmm. So she also destroyed everything.
I mean, it was the Autumn Lands, the same kind of thing. There was that guy with all the animals, the Kurt Busiek book. There's Black Science.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I don't know that I'm going to continue with this one.
I'm wondering if the connectedness of comics through social media has caused a zeitgeist and a reverberation of concepts. Because everybody is so much more in contact with each other than they ever used to be. I mean, they all used to go into the office and work there. So at one point, they were all written by the same two guys. So
right.
Who knows?
I think it's more political.
Maybe. Maybe. Let's very quickly drop into Star Wars Corner. And I've talked about this book before, too, but I wanted to... I was talking about Star Wars Thrawn, number 5, by Jody Hauser with art by Luke Ross. And this book's great. It feels like reading one of those old Star Wars novels where it's just basically like, very reductively, it's Sherlock Holmes as an Imperial admiral.
Right.
Like, he's a step of everybody. He knows what's going on.
Is he an admiral or is he a grand admiral?
He's an admiral at this point, I think. And he wasn't that. He was just sort of a middle-level officer before. And then he was raised up. So, like, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of subtext and a lot of intrigue. And, I think it's Grand Admiral Yularen, who's the guy in white with the big mustache. You may remember him from the scene in the first in A New Hope. He's in this. Like, it's very sophisticated and it's very interesting. The Luke Ross art is great. Thrawn is a super interesting character when you give him time. Like, this wouldn't fit in like a Star Wars movie. It would be terrible because it wouldn't play the same way that it does in the novels or in the comic books. But it's been a really fun series. I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
I guess it was a mini.
I can't imagine this would be an ongoing, but I don't know.
Is it your favorite Star Wars book right now?
Is it? I don't know.
You were all mad at Star Wars last week and... You've got Vader.
I guess right now.
Are there any other books? So is it those three?
Dr. Aphra, Star Wars, and Vader. Vader's really good, actually. I like Vader a lot, too. So Vader and Aphra used to be the same thing, but they're not. Now they're sort of two different things. So Aphra's leaving me behind. And then there was we can't forgive the Wedge.
No. Never forget.
Never forget.
Let's go to Patrons Pick, which is at patreon.com/ifanboy. All the patrons who are supporting the show can vote on a book to add to the rundown. Every patron at any level can vote. And this week, very robust voting. Lots of books got votes. It was pretty close for a while until at the very end, Hawkman number 1 soared away from the competition and took the patron pick. And this is the first issue of a new Hawkman book written by Robert Venditti, who writes Green Lantern. Hal Jordan, the Green Lanterns, and he also came up for us on The Surrogates.
And the mailroom of Top Shelf Comics, literally.
Brian Hitch on art, who was one of the most important comic artists of the last 20 years.
Uh-huh.
Previously on Justice League. I have two main thoughts to kick off. One is that when they said Brian Hitch, I was not enthused.
I think that's interesting. I had the same thought, but also while reading it. Go on.
But by the end of it, I was okay with it for some reason. I thought he did a good job. He's never going to be what he was before, the guy who changed the look of comics.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, like, a lot of those elements are still there. There were shots in this. I was like,
no, but it's not going to be ever that special.
Right,
again.
Sure.
I think a lot of the work he's done recently, when he drew Justice League for a couple of issues, was really sort of stiff and lifeless. This felt like he cut loose a little bit more.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
And it was looser. It had energy to it. There's a big-ass battle in the beginning when Hawkman's fighting that giant stone flying gorilla. I thought that was a nice sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, his faces are weird sometimes, but they didn't. I don't know. I just liked the look of this book more than I thought I was going to. I think maybe my expectations were super low, but I ended up being pleasantly surprised by the way it looked. And then my other thought was, I'm a big Hawkman fan, and so I was excited when they announced it. But then I started reading it, and I was like, oh great, another book about who am I?
Yeah,
Hawkman, but by the end they kind of sort of condensed it down to basically just saying I am this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Carter Hall. I'm Hawkman, and that's just it. And that's, I mean, we have the double page spread where he sees all the Hawkmen that's ever been, all the different versions, and he says, kind of, oh, I have been all these people. I haven't just been reincarnating across time. I've been reincarnating across space. And as long as this is now put to bed and we just move forward with Carter Hall, Hawkman, being a superhero, then that's great. But I'm sure they won't do that.
No.
They're incapable of doing that.
No, I've no trust that that's not going to happen. And so I am not a Hawkman fan. That isn't to say I'm against Hawkman. I've just never read a single Hawkman thing that I found interesting. I've had him be in things that were sort of interesting, but it wasn't ever him that was interesting because he is such a black hole of plot.
Oh, for sure. For the last 20 years, the only Hawkman plot they seem to be able to come up with is, who is a Hawkman?
Yeah.
They just can't seem to tell a Hawkman story.
Because here's the thing. They don't fucking know who Hawkman is. So they don't just pick a lane and go with it. That's got to be the story that we don't know what to do. And it's boring. And I really got that same feeling from this. I think I thought the same as you on the Hitch art. I didn't love it, but I was like, oh, I don't hate it. You know, like, not that I hate it, but, you know, like, it's always been sort of underwhelming in a way. And I thought there was, yeah, I think a looseness. I think you described it really well. I'm going to go with everything you said there. But I was bored stiff. I didn't care. Like, it was, this was a tough one to read for me because it wasn't bad. It just was, you know, it was. It happened. And I don't care. Like, and I absolutely entered with a bias. In terms of like, this is, you know, like it would have to be amazing. And it's always like this, I don't know, it's always this style. Like even Brian Hitch, you know, who's Brian Hitch, but like, you know, muscly superhero kind of deal. Like, I mean, like, I just feel like they need to approach Hawkman from a completely different direction if they want to make it interesting to me. And that hasn't happened. The cover was boring. The logo was boring. It was just all like, here's, you know, eggs and toast.
I did our dear departed iFanboy Mini did a whole mini episode about Hawkman and this very problem. And this was, I don't know, 10 years ago. And that was, it had already been a 10-year problem at that point. You know, there are all kinds of business problems behind the scenes that people will never understand who don't work there. So we don't know why things are the way they are, really. But it just astounds me that they can't just sit down and realize that they've been trying to tell the story now for 20 years and it doesn't work. No one cares.
Jeff Johns couldn't do it. Take a different tack.
He did the most successfully, and that wasn't even all that successful. Just clear the deck. Pick one of these versions of Hawkman and just move forward with that version of him. And don't do any stories about him wondering who he is. Don't do any stories about him finding out there are other Hawkmen. Don't do any stories, even about reincarnation. Just tell a Hawkman story. What is it that makes Hawkman unique? And tell a story about that. And don't tell me the thing that makes him unique is that he doesn't know who he is, because that's not unique. And it's also annoying at this point.
You have to tell us who he is.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. It's really weird that they don't see that. I don't understand why.
Well.
So there you go. Let's do ratings.
Ratings.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. I did enjoy reading it, even though I was annoyed by it.
2.25. It wasn't bad. I don't care. It elicited no... Even the shot of the gorilla, I was like, I've seen that shot of that gorilla in that pose before. Like, it was good. Technically, it was all where it was supposed to be. But it was just so, like, here's comic book stuff from mediocre superhero comic books.
Sticking with it?
No.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. Okay. I barely finished this one.
I will definitely be sticking with it because I love Hawkman.
Yeah. Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. All right, let's do some patron powers. Every week at patreon.com/ifanboy, people who join up, get their own dumb superpower at the $5 or higher level. And every week on the show, we like to thank them for doing so. We'll thank our first patron, Dan Carson. Dan has individual beard hair control.
Like Medusa from the Inhumans?
Yes, but only for his beard hair.
Does that include sideburns and mustache?
Yes. Let's say facial hair.
So anything below the bottom curve of the ear?
Anything below the ear, he can move independently.
Okay. Can it grow?
He can't grow it. He just can move it. So if he needs it to be like a, you know, useful, it's going to take a while to grow it out. He can't make it grow, but once it is there, he can move it.
So this patron power is brought to you by Harry's. Is what you're saying to me.
It's brought to you by the one hair in my face that goes the other way than the other hairs, and I just want to move it.
David Baroldi always knows the best place in town. Can roll into any town. Like, what's the best place to have chili around here? Oh, that's down the corner. You want to go around? Like he knows the best place in town. I need a haircut. Oh, you want to go to Stephanie for that?
And doesn't matter what town?
No, yeah, you want to go on a road trip with David. He's gonna unlock all the keys to wherever you're going. It's gonna make it seem like everywhere you're going is a magical place because he knows the best place in town.
And even if he's never been there before, he just knows it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a psychic thing. And best is not like, no, again, best is not subjective in this. And he's like, well, that is the best. If you don't like it, you're probably wrong. You're
just objectively, he knows.
Yeah, or you're just being, you know, contrarian.
Carl Perry, he can share his pain.
Ugh.
And what I mean by that is he can send his physical pain to another person. He can also bring it back.
Can he take it from somebody else and therefore have a surplus of his own?
No. But, you know, if he's got like a thing with his foot and it's annoying, he can make someone else feel that pain.
And that takes it away from him.
Yes.
And it's conscious? So yeah, it's not like it. If you're within like his orbit, then you're like, oh, my ribs.
No, no, he's got it's like it's purposeful.
Sort of like the Black Panther's suit.
Well, he's not blow yeah, back. It's just like also useful. He's in the doctor. The doctor's like, you know, tell me where it hurts. He's like, I'm going to show you where it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctor will be like, oh, yeah, that I do. I see what that is.
Just so you know, you're about to start drilling my teeth. I'd be careful if I were you there, Docco.
Mm-hmm. And share his pain.
Mm-hmm. Cody Campbell.
He's a gunslinger.
May or may not be, but it's irrelevant because he knows exactly what time you should be leaving for both the movies and the airport.
Just those two things, though.
Yes. Because it's a lot of time. Should we go early to get seats? Or is the line going to be long? Is it going to be a security? He knows exactly when to leave for the movies and the airport. And that can also be dependent on your goal. If your goal is, I want to make sure that I get a good seat, or I want to get there in time to have the popcorn, or I want to get something to eat at the gate beforehand. It's all timed out. Leave it about 2:30. Leave it 2:35.
You need to give Cody your criteria, or does he know your criteria innately?
No, you can tell him, you know, he doesn't need everything down to the wire. He doesn't need to know, like, make, model of the car. But, you know, like, my flight is at 8:45. I got to stop at Walgreens, and I want to get something to pick up before I get on the plane. And he's like, oh, you want to leave at 5:20.
And so Cody must live in one of those places where people live like animals and don't have reserved seating at the movie theater.
Well, I mean, there's other factors involved.
I see.
There's parking. There's lines. There's traffic en route. There's, you know, all sorts of things can get in the way of that. It's not just reserved
seating. Oh, I hear you, man. I once was trying to go to the theater in the Valley.
Oh, God.
And about halfway, just turned around and said, not going to the movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And got off the freeway and went home because there was no way I was going to make it with time. So he would have been helpful at that point.
Conversely, when I went to see Solo, I thought, well, geez, when I went to see Avengers, there's a line down the hallway. Go see Solo. And I got there like a half an hour early and I was the only person in the theater.
Cody would have been like, dude, you can leave 5 minutes before showtime.
Yep. I could have. Not that I didn't mind the time and the quiet.
Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go join up, and every patron can vote in the patron pick. And if you're at a $5 or higher level, you can get your own dumb superpower on the show. And thank you to everyone who joins up and supports us at patreon.com/iFanboy.
If you like what you're listening to today and you want to be part of it and help it out and let it continue to flourish and grow, get over to patreon.com/iFanboy. We are still working on our next goal. I feel like I'll be saying this for a while. Be honest with everybody listening, which would be to have a non-comics media podcast. I think the folks on Facebook have done what they can to try to get us even there, even temporarily. Hasn't happened yet. So that would be the next thing. And honestly, doing another podcast every month is a lot of work. So we're sticking by our guns. I'm not going to do that for you for nothing. Sorry. You could also, and again, just, you know, in this world where you know, media isn't compensated the same way that it used to be, it's a really important and generous, too, way of sort of supporting the things that you love directly. It makes a big difference to us who do this show, and it's, you know, it's a significant portion of our lives still, so we kind of have to justify that, and this is one way that you can help that happen and continue things going. You can also go to ifanboy.threadless.com, where you can order any of our t-shirts or those same logos of the 7 designs that we have there on other items that are there. Right now, if you're into the things that are popular, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters is sort of the front runner, eclipsing for the first time just our standard iFanboy logo, which is kind of cool. That's really fun to have that going on. You can also, if you want to avoid all that stuff, but you're like, hey, I want to throw you guys a little tip because I like what you're doing, you can go to ifanboy.com/support and you can find a direct link for PayPal there. You can also go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and there you're going to find links to Amazon and the books that we have on our Booksplode podcast. And you'll also find links to those on each Pick of the Week podcast. The pick is linked there, so to get that or get you over to Amazon. That is a continually really good way to help out iFanboy as well. And we encourage that use.
So let's do one email.
Greg writes in and says, last week's episode made me realize, and I could be wrong here, I don't think Bendis ever wrote a true 616 Fantastic Four book. I feel like Bendis on FF would have been a perfect fit. This made me wonder about other great creator character fits we'll never see. For example, I would have loved a Darwin issue of the Kamandi Challenge or a run on Green Lantern. Are there any missed creator opportunities that you wish we all got to see? I mean, as soon as he said Darwin, I was like, yes. Well, basically anything. I will say, like, there was a time when people talked about, they're both Superman related for me. There was a time when somebody was taking over Superman and it was put to us, like, who would you put on that book? And we were all like, Darwin. Like, Darwin should be the Superman artist, either just drawing, but I would have gone with writing and drawing as well. I think that's a thing that we missed. We talked about Doc Shaner a lot being on Superman. I don't know that we've missed that, but it's a thing that hasn't happened, which seems odd. And then finally, I hate to do this, but again, Superman, there was a Mark Waid run of Superman that never happened. And, right. And like, you think about guys who know Superman and know how to write comic books and can do it. You know, there was basically a feud with Dan DiDio.
Yep.
And he's like, I'm not doing that until that guy's gone. And I think there could have been something really interesting there.
The industry is so small, it's hard to say that none of these things are ever going to happen. So I don't really think about, we never got that, you know, Kurt Busiek run on Flash, because you're good.
Sure.
Still good. And if a guy like Darwin's different, I'd rather just have the guy back and live, and I don't really care what comics he draws. But, I mean, it's more like, I guess, retired creators or people who are no longer with us. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. It's hard because you say you never say never, but then, you know, these guys just rotated around back and forth. Mm-hmm. So
I think it would be very unlikely. I mean, Bendis has still got decades in him.
Oh, yeah. Bendis
will come back around.
And, you know, I would be very surprised if the day came that we didn't see Mark Waid writing a DC book. Who knows what will happen in the future with either people in charge or people's feuds or who knows. It's just the industry is not big enough and people don't make enough money to basically put any sort of real stakes in the ground.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, and this is the, you know, personal sort of point of view kind of thing. Like, I have found a lot of the time with me that the big matchup of creator and property isn't the thing that's most fulfilling to me. It's when there's a surprise. Like, if you'd have said to me, Bendis and Iron Man,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, totally do that. But it turned out that was a really fun, or Matt Fraction and Hawkeye or something like that. Those surprising things, or Abnett and Lanning on the Guardians of the Galaxy, like, no one could have called that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not true. Editors can call that. They can do that.
Right place, right time.
Garth Ennis on Vietnam Punisher. Oh, okay. Right. You know, Garth Ennis on Cold War Nick Fury. That's interesting to me. I tell you what, though. Give Garth Ennis a Justice League 6 issues. Blow you away. It'll never happen.
Maybe. He hates those characters.
I know, but he could do it. But in that same way, there was a time where if they'd have let him do that, he would have killed on it. And then, like, over time, like, that, like, isn't going to happen. So, like, that's a thing we've missed.
Right.
You know? Same. And Warren Ellis works the same way.
You go back to Grant Morrison's JLA. I mean, he's a guy who did all these off-kilter, off-beat stories previous to that. So you wouldn't think... I wouldn't have predicted that the guy who did Doom Patrol and The Invisibles and Arkham Asylum would have done one of the most straight-ahead, earnest, Silver Age-y superhero books that would have really lent like a bomb and changed the medium.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it. He had that in him. And so you never do know.
Well, we know why now, because he wrote a book. So we got to tell what he thought was important.
On the other hand, I think Bendis, on the FF would be interesting. I think he has that.
Oh, I thought that.
Familial sensibility.
A long time ago, Jason Aaron told us that his favorite character was The Thing, and he still hasn't written it.
Right.
I think there's all sorts of things.
I mean, who knows? The industry's in such a weird spot right now.
Mm-hmm. But even so, like, I really don't think about it in those terms. I think about it in terms of, like, you know, what's a good unexpected thing rather than what's a you know, I'm trying to think of what a huge, like, any recent, like, this huge name or this interesting name is on this huge property and when that excited me. And yeah.
Well, it is interesting that that's the only real big Marvel family that Bendis didn't touch. You know, he did Avengers, he did X-Men.
Yeah.
And he did Spider-Man. The only real big one left, I guess, is Fantastic Four.
Yep.
Is there another one?
No, I mean, he did. Did you like Uncanny X-Men?
He did. I mean, he did the X-Men books. He did all new X-Men.
I didn't read it, so I kind of.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember now. Yeah, I guess so.
Contact@ifanboy.com is where you can email us to get your email on the show. Thanks for everyone who writes in. And let's do some quick plugs. Josh, we have a Talksplode this month.
We do have a Talksplode. You can go back to the last one, which was Donny Cates. I'm working on this one. There will be one before the end of the month. Scheduling is normally difficult, but scheduling during con season has an added difficulty that I had not. Most people are like, sure. Actually, people are like, sure, or they just never respond. So there's been a couple of those. So we've got options. I've got a couple of really interesting conversations. I got a whole back pocket of things that I've been meaning to do for a long time. So that'll be coming up. You can also go back, listen to our Booksplode on New Avengers 1, which has proven to be a very popular, is not the word I'm looking for. People have really enjoyed that show. I think, you know, equal with how much we enjoyed recording it and reading it and talking about it. If you haven't, I really recommend that.
I'm available for interviews if you need someone for your Talksplode.
Okay. How did you break into comics, Connor?
Let's save it for the interview.
Okay, that's fine.
We also should figure out what our next book is.
One at a time.
I'm just saying.
I have a problem in front of me. Don't give me another problem. That's not going to help me solve it.
2 weeks till the next month. You got to figure it out.
No, 6 weeks until deadline. You're not working this the right angle.
Coming up, our next special edition podcast will be Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is coming out in the beginning of July. So that'll be our next special edition show. We're in sort of a weird dead zone where nothing's going on. Yes, the next season of Luke Cage is coming out soon. No, we will not be doing a podcast on it. The next special edition show will be Ant-Man and the Wasp in July.
I'm looking forward to it. I think I'm traveling when that comes out. Head over to ifanboy.com to find out about all our podcasts and you find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following @ifanboy on Twitter, and you can follow us individually. Maybe. It depends on how I'm feeling that day. On @JFlanagan on Twitter and Instagram or @CLSkillPatrick on Instagram.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes. Or you don't have to write a review, just leave a star rating, one click and you're done. Do that for any podcast you listen to. It is an easy way, a fast way to help the show you like. Get more people to find it. Better than that is to tell your friends or your family or your postman or the guy that behind the deli makes your sandwiches. Anyone, if you think they might like the podcast, let them know. Spread the iFanboy love, just like that guy spreading his mayo all over your bread.
That went somewhere that I didn't expect, and I think that's why people should listen. Oh, yeah, wait a minute, Mr. Postman. Do you like comic podcasts, Mr. Postman?
That's true.
That went to another place just there. Not a good place. I didn't say that.
I was out of my apartment for 1 hour yesterday. Mm. 1 hour.
That sounds like a good day. I don't get out of here at all.
That was the 1 hour in which a delivery which required a signature tried to come.
Classic Kilpatrick.
It's just like they have a sensor in their truck that says, oh, they've left.
I was waiting for a package the other day, and it was FedEx, and it was imperative that it came within a certain parameter of time. And I heard the truck coming down and I went, they're not going to be able to slow down enough to make this house. And I just saw the FedEx truck just zoom past my house. And it came back around an hour later. And I was like, slow down on that hill, pal. That's a true story.
If they'd made, try to make the turn and spun out and
like stuff goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want that.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm going to hopefully not be on cold medicine and thus more peppy next week. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Goodbye. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now?
I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.